Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Andrew McCarthy of National View Online, and my colleague, Thaddeus McCutter of American Greatness, to comment on Trump before the courts. There are several directions to go here, but right now we're going to pay attention to the most immediate case, the one arguing immunity before a three-judge panel of the D.C. court. This is federal court. This is a very, very big deal. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. And Andrew McCarthy has written about this for National Review Online. Andy, the three-judge panel, is that ordinary? Because I know there are many more judges at the D.C. court. Is it ordinary to choose three judges to hear a case like this? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John and Thaddeus. Yes, that is the routine of the Circuit Courts of Appeal, John. They hear appeals by three judge panels, and they are panels that are randomly assigned. The court has a number of what they call active judges, which just means they're full-time judges of the court. There are 11 of them in the D.C. Circuit, 7 Democratic appointed, 4 Republican appointed, and that's supplemented by senior judges. When judges have a certain amount of service and reach a certain age, there's a formula for it. They can take senior status, which means they get a much more limited caseload. The only reason that that's worth explaining at this point is assuming former President Trump loses this appeal, his next move would be to ask for what's known as rehearing en banc, which would be rehearing by the full court. And the only judges who sit en banc are the active judges of the court, not the senior judges.
This hearing appeal followed a decision by District Judge Tanya Chutkan ruling that former President Trump does not enjoy immunity for his conduct on or about January 6th. This has to do with the trial pending in March of this year brought by a special counsel against Mr. Trump. Thaddeus, you have a question.
Andy, why does the immunity clause not protect Mr. Trump, in your opinion?
I think that the problem, Thaddeus, is there is no real immunity clause. It's the impeachment clause that he's trying to sort of cull immunity out of. And what the impeachment clause, there are a number of impeachment clauses in the Constitution, but the one that he is relying on in Article 1, Section 3 is the one that lays out what the penalties are for impeachment. And it makes clear that the penalties for impeachment are removal from office and disqualification for holding from holding future office. But then importantly, it goes on to say, but the party impeached may still face either criminal prosecution or civil lawsuits. So on the basis of that, because the provision refers explicitly to conviction but not to acquittal, what Trump is trying to argue is that because he was acquitted by the Senate, that provision, the logic of it, blocks his prosecution, because what the provision says is that the party convicted of an impeachment may be prosecuted criminally in court. I don't think it applies, because the provision was not trying to draw a distinction between conviction and acquittal. What the provision is making clear is that the being convicted in a impeachment proceeding, which is not a court proceeding and not a criminal proceeding, doesn't have any double jeopardy effect that would bar a subsequent prosecution. There was no reason to refer to people who were acquitted, just like if you look at a criminal statute where you have a penalty provision in a criminal statute, it doesn't refer to people who were acquitted at trial because the only relevance is to the people who are convicted. So it's really not a double jeopardy provision at all.
So we have two presentations by the Trump attorneys, one for immunity and one for double jeopardy. I want to stay with something that you've also written, Andy, which is the effect of all of this is to lengthen the period of time before the trial. And you've said that that is a Trump attorney plan to drag this out as long as possible to make it very unlikely anything can be concluded either before the Republican convention or before the election. I can't recall. Do I remember that correctly, Andy?
That is correct, John. I think that no matter what substantive issue we're talking about, and especially the federal prosecutions of former President Trump, equally important to the substance of or the legal merits of what we're talking about is the timing issue. So immunity is not President Trump's best legal argument here, but it may be his most valuable legal argument, or at least it was up until recently, because it's the one issue in the case that where federal law allows a pretrial appeal. And the importance of a pretrial appeal is in federal law, you only participate in a case before one court at a time. So once a case is allowed to be appealed, then all jurisdiction is removed from the trial court and it transfers to the district court, which means the trial judge cannot act on the case. The reason Trump wants to elongate this is there's a lot of pretrial litigation and many, many rulings and lots of discovery that has to go on in the district court, in the lower court, the trial court, if there's any chance for this trial to take place on March 4th. So what Trump wants is to elongate the appellate proceedings, because as long as they're going on, Judge Chutkan cannot act on the case. And if she can't have the kind of proceedings that you would have to get ready for this trial, it's a pipe dream that you could possibly have it on March 4th. So he's trying to delay.
Thaddeus, you have a question.
Yes, Andy, I apologize. The impeachment clause of the Constitution being the supreme law of the land, I want to hone in on something you've said and we've talked about before. Impeachment is a legislative proceeding. We're talking about criminal judicial proceedings at this point, right?
Correct. Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean,
which would go even to the heart of the question about double jeopardy.
Yes. And the thing is that people need to understand double jeopardy is a very narrow safeguard. It is a criminal judicial safeguard and merely means that once a person has been prosecuted, he cannot be prosecuted a second time for the same offense by the same sovereign. So it's actually a pretty narrow protection in the sense that, just to give an example, if I were tried and acquitted for bank robbery, the government could not try me a second time on the same charge of bank robbery. They could try me on conspiracy to commit bank robbery, because even though it would be exactly the same facts that would be at issue, it's a different charge from the one in the first case. So you can see that it's narrow. It's also only a protection against the sovereign that prosecutes you in criminal court. So, for example, if New York, the state, were to prosecute me for distributing cocaine, if I were acquitted or convicted, the federal government could try me on exactly the same charge under the federal law against distributing narcotics, because the federal government is a different sovereign from the state government. And the double jeopardy protection only applies to the same sovereign. In this instance, as Thaddeus is pointing out, impeachment is not a judicial proceeding at all, much less a criminal judicial proceeding. It's simply a political process, the upshot of which is to strip away political power. It has nothing to do with criminal liability, nothing to do with the rights to life, liberty, and property that due process is intended to protect in the criminal context.
I want to stay with the immunity claim by the attorneys for the former president, not on the basis of the law, but on the basis of that timeline you have written about, Andy, because I have read, and I can't say where, and I don't know if it's substantive, I have read that what we're dealing with here is a process that is going to necessarily lead to appeals. This three-judge panel will have a decision that can be appealed to en banc, as you say, all of the judges of the D.C. Court. That can be appealed, I believe, to the Supreme Court. Is all that correct? That would all take weeks to play out.
Yeah, that's correct, John. And I had a feeling you might ask me about that. So I looked at the appellate rules before we came on because the timeline is so important. So once the Court of Appeals, the three-judge panel, decides this case, which I think it'll be fairly rapidly, I would be surprised if we didn't have a decision by sometime next week. At that point, Trump has 14 days to appeal to the full D.C. Circuit Court, that is, en banc all 11 judges. Those applications for rehearing en banc are routinely denied. In fact, the government is not even required to respond unless the court asks for a response. That's how rare these rehearings are. So I think Trump can play this out for about 2 weeks after the court makes its ruling. And then the interesting thing is Trump, if he lost in the three-judge panel and he lost on the en banc request, he would then appeal to the Supreme Court. He has 90 days to appeal to the Supreme Court, but if he hasn't appealed after a certain period of time, after the Court of Appeals formally issues its ruling, the case would go back to Judge Chutkan. So Trump's incentive would be to appeal to the Supreme Court right away, because that would keep the case frozen in the district court. And then it would be a matter of how quickly the Supreme Court acted on Trump's appeal.
90 days? He has 90 days to appeal, or from appeal, he has 90 days? I don't know.
He has 90 days to ask the Supreme. What he would apply for is a writ of certiorari, which it means the Supreme Court would be being asked to accept the case. He could wait for 90 days, but once the case is decided in the Court of Appeals, if he hasn't appealed to the Supreme Court, the mandate would go back, which means the jurisdiction would go back to Judge Chutkan. So what Trump will want to do to play this out as much as he can is wait a few days maybe to appeal to the Supreme Court, but then appeal to the Supreme Court, because otherwise the case goes back to Judge Chutkan, and then it will be a matter of how long the court takes to act on it.
That is, you have a question.
Andy, let's say that Trump loses with the three-judge panel. He files for an en banc hearing. That hearing is denied. Does that have any impact upon the Supreme Court's ability to hear an appeal from Donald Trump?
No. The appeal would be taken from the three-judge panel's ruling. The fact that the full circuit didn't hear it will probably be of no moment to the court, which will grapple with what the three-judge panel did.
Speaking with Andrew McCarthy and Thaddeus McCotter about the tangle of court cases before former President Trump on his way to the Republican convention, whether he is winning or losing the nomination process, these court proceedings will proceed. We're going to turn to another court proceeding. This is a civil case in New York when we come back, where there's been some news. And then Andy has some remarks about a strange conduct of the president's son and members of Congress within these last hours. Impossible to tell. That's why I need Andy's help. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.